It's time for Mac Break Weekly breaking news right in the middle of the show. Apple and Qualcomm settle. There's not a lot to say about it, but we will speculate like crazy. We'll also talk about the new iOS 13. And we're joined by an actual Apple developer. He has a lot to say. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 657, recorded Tuesday, April 16th, 2019. Baked Apple. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy Visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. And by Roman. Skip the waiting room and awkward face-to-face meetings. Get ED medication conveniently delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. For a free online visit, go to getroman.com/macbreak. And by Atlassian. Atlassian's software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Apple news. And there is Apple news. Lori Gill is here. Hello, Lori Gill.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I am wonderful, star of the fabulous rock and roll band Sick Burn. And managing editor at iMore. Okay. That's a day
job. The boring part.
The day job. Also here, your boss from iMore, Renee Ritchie. Hello, Renee.
Lori's my boss.
Oh, that's never mind. I take it back. Whoever the boss is.
Tell him what to do.
All her songs and music.
Andy Anako also here from WGBH in Boston. Andrew?
Hello.
Hello.
Andy's joining my band next, too.
Are you? Is he going to be on the sideburns?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Sideburns. I've got the professional set of spoons for her band.
The good ones. And as we do almost every year, we welcome back Oliver Breidenbach. He is the founder and chief at Boinks Software, BOINX.com, situated in Munich.
Yes.
Hi, Oliver. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
You were out for NAB.
NAB, yeah. In Las Vegas.
What used to be the National Association of Broadcasters show.
And what is it now?
I don't know. NAB.
You nabbed them, though, Leo. You nabbed them.
Nab. And that's because Boinks does a lot of video stuff.
Yes.
In fact, Boinks originally was the video program, right?
Yeah.
Do you still do that? Or
It's now rebranded as Mimo Live, so the live video production application
for the Macintosh. Yeah. So if you've got a Mac, you don't need a TriCaster. You could just do Mimo Live.
Exactly.
And this is new too. What's this Mouse Posé 4?
Mouse Posé is if you do presentations or screencasts, you might want to show people where your mouse is and what keys you press and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so
exposes the mouse.
Yeah, yes. And draws a... It's a virtual laser pointer, basically.
Oh, I like that. Look at that. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things not everybody needs, but if you do.
Yeah.
I need that. I need that, like, now.
Do you do presentations a lot?
I do
for your videos. Because, you know, this is one thing that always kind of bugged me about Mac OS. Windows lets you change the cursor and make really big ones if you want, and it's just like it's hardwired in the Mac.
You can shake it.
You can shake it and it gets big. I do that. But
I do that, too.
Yeah.
I think
it'd be nice to have an all-time large, though.
Yeah.
The mouse pointer is sandboxed for our safety.
You may not mess with it.
Do not let the mouse escape.
Hey, before we go anyway, great to have you, Oliver. Thank you for coming. Oliver gives us the developer's perspective, which we like to get from time to time. Thank you, Renee, for filling in for me last week while I was working on my tan.
Oh, you were chasing 5G. That was a decision we made. You were chasing the elusive 5G.
It's out here somewhere on the beach and the surf at Kauai. Yeah.
Love it.
Can I just say that it's kind of unfair when you come back from Hawaii looking so much like less pale than the rest of us. Like I don't know if the studio can give us any help with color. Like Oliver, that's your next feature for your streaming thing. It's basically an anti-pale, anti-nerd skin.
A Leo filter.
I really didn't go out into the sun to get tan at all, and I covered myself, slathered myself with the, as we do these days, with sunscreen, but. You get a lot of sun, you can't help but turn a little orange.
You and Hasselhoff, you can't help yourself.
Can't help it. Our hearts go out to, it was just tragic watching Notre Dame burn yesterday. My heart was in my throat. Already hundreds of millions of euros have been pledged to its rebuilding. Tim Cook, including Apple. Tim Cook tweeted, they didn't say how much, but he did tweet that Apple will be donating to the rebuilding efforts to help restore Notre Dame's precious heritage for future generations.
Isn't that ironic? Because for years beforehand, they were having enormous amounts of trouble raising money just to get the thing back to its glory and to make safety and stability improvements. That it was such a big deal. And now, and it's horrible that they lost their roof and their spire, but in the long run, we might look back and say they would not have gotten 300, 400 million euros to absolutely fix up this place and make it safe and stable for the next 200 or 300 years had not this tragedy happened.
Although it'll be sad going to Paris and seeing, what used to be the central piece of the architecture there. People talk about the Eiffel Tower, but I always went to Notre Dame on day one. It's the first place I'd go.
We have a little replica of it in Montreal.
What's that called?
I think it's just Notre Dame. They built it when we arrived here.
There ain't nothing like it.
Notre Dame.
All right. There is a lot of Apple news today.
That can't be right.
I know. What happened?
I spent 2 hours reading up last night. That's no fair.
I know. This is supposed to be our vacation in between WWDC. Yes. Apple, according to the Financial Times, which I would pull up, except they're paywalled, so I can never read their articles. Fortunately, others rehash for us. This is from 9 to 5, Mac. Financial Times says Apple is spending $500 million to develop games for Apple Arcade. That kind of makes sense because we were wondering, who's going to do this, these exclusives, and forego a chance to make money? Well, if Apple's giving you $20 million to write a program, maybe you would.
Like getting a full season order from YouTube TV and not having to worry about selling your show.
This news comes alongside the news that Apple's spending almost the same on Texture. So we didn't know. We knew Apple bought Texture last year, almost more than a year ago. That was the magazine subscription app that eventually became News Plus, but we didn't know how much. It's the New York Post, of all people, not the most reliable of papers, but they say that Apple paid $100 million up front. That sounds about right. To the publishers who started a Texture, which were all magazine publishers, Condé Nast, Hearst, Meredith, and Rogers. KKR, which invested, they're a VC firm, also got a cut. But according to the Post, there's also a guaranteed minimum payout of $145 million for the first year for those publishers. In the second and third year, Apple guarantees $240 million. So when you add it all up, we're talking almost $500 million for Texture.
It's real money.
The Apple's laid out, if you include what they paid or were rumored to have paid for TV Plus, now $2 billion to beef up its services business. But since they made $9 billion last year, I guess maybe it's worth it.
Yeah. I think they're really banking that this is going to work.
That's like putting all the chips on on red, right? That's like
it's a known strategy. It's just not an Apple strategy. Apple typically would run things at break even. App Store quickly went above break even, but they would run iTunes content and movies and all of those things, which were expensive to acquire, but they would sell them for just barely above break even, so they could provide content and increase hardware sales. And now we're again at that point where the hardware markets are all super mature, and they might just see that this is the sort of what they need to do to increase the value of their devices to keep selling and encouraging upgrades on those devices. And then it becomes sort of an investment in the overall experience, if not the specific devices.
Well, that's what changes when you become a services company as opposed to a hardware company, right?
I mean, they've always been a product company. Like, to me, like when you say it's a software company, but they make hardware, they're a hardware company, but they do. Like, Apple has all of those sort of pieces. They is like a full widget company from the silicon all the way up to the pixels. And this, but they were incomplete when it came to the services picture.
But not a content company. They made so much, right?
Yeah, well, they made like iWork and iLife, which aren't content the way you typically think about them. But when you look at like Arcade is also software. It's just entertainment software and not productivity software. So it's like they want to provide this full-on experience for you. So you get an iPhone, you sit down, and yeah, you can run apps and you can use the web and you can make phone calls. But you also have all this. And the TV itself is becoming a problem. It's not homogenous like music. You can't just get Spotify or just get Apple Music and get everything. You have to get Netflix, and then do you want Disney Plus? Because I know I do now. And do you want these other things? And they might be seeing themselves as a modern day digital hub where you don't necessarily want or get everything, but it's the easiest place to watch and manage all these different services that keep accruing into our wallets.
But it also reflects the fact that the streaming services, whether it's digital music, whether it's video, music, or even games, it's becoming so fragmented at this point because of companies like Disney being able to aggregate so much content in and of themselves and being able to build the infrastructure to launch their own services. The idea that you can subscribe to Netflix and have a really good chance that whatever movie you want to see is going to hit Netflix eventually, that window is really closing. The idea that you'll be able to subscribe to something like Hulu and not have to factor in, well, what studio owns the content that I really want to watch on Hulu, that window is also closing. And so that if Apple, I think Apple is just aware that if they don't start creating their own content or locking in their own content that's unique to their services, they're going to get locked out by Disney and by Hulu and by Netflix and by every other service that is also trying to get things within their own private walls and try to turn us into a world in which we owe $9 a month to 8 different people to get what we used to get off of a $40 cable subscription 10 years ago. I've actually started thinking that there might be a time where I cut the cable like 2 years ago. I might come back to Verizon and say, hi, can I have my cable back? That didn't work out so well. I'm sorry about those awful things I wrote about you.
The way you're describing Apple versus like Hulu and Netflix and Apple being locked out, though, doesn't there's sort of different ways of describing this, because Apple's never been a streaming service. It's been basically a store that provides these streaming services from distributors. And in this case, it doesn't seem like Apple would be getting locked out, because all Apple was ever doing previously was providing a means to share those apps, to share those services. I do think it's odd to me that Apple is joining the content creation world. When Disney Plus was being unveiled and they were talking more about the details about it, I thought, well, this makes sense. Disney makes movies. Disney makes TV shows. So an app that delivers the content that Disney has been creating all these years, all in one tight little package, it makes sense to me. But now Apple is trying to be Disney. It's trying to be Warner Brothers. It's trying to be all these other, you know, movie and TV show distribution companies, but so late to the game that it's hard for me to kind of wrap my head around what Apple is doing when it comes to its exclusive movies.
You're not alone. I don't even know if Apple understands what its plans are. I mean, for a while, I think Apple had hopes of being an aggregator. They wanted to be the place you'd go if you cut the cord, Andy, because all the stuff that you wanted would be in this one place on your Apple TV. But then that didn't work out so well because the networks wouldn't play ball. They couldn't get other content creators to play ball. So then they said, maybe we should create our own content. And I think that's what we saw last month in their announcement, which is a very confused Apple. They didn't know, are we a creator? Are we an aggregator?
Did you see Benedict Evans' essay on that? Because I thought that was super interesting, because a lot of times we look at things through the lens of we've been following Apple for 20 years and this is what we expect Apple to do, and they're a tech company. I remember somebody asked Apple at the event, you know, are you still a tech company? Which got a real interesting sort of, yeah, of course we're a tech company, but we're using technology to do X, Y, Z. And Ben's point was, I think, really apt. He said that, you know, we're looking at this and going, it doesn't make any sense. And meanwhile, if you step back and you look at it, Apple is transforming from it just works to you can just trust it. And that sounds like something really simple and stupid. But when you look at all the various things that are coming up, the services, everything that's going on, trust is a fundamental issue. I was joking about Facebook before the show began. But just being able to go to a place and sanely manage all of these things with a company that you trust to respect your privacy could be a huge valuable service. And I think it's entirely in keeping with Apple's sort of product outlook going back to that digital hub day.
He says really that it's brand. And
yes.
And I think that that's pretty clear that Apple, even going back to when they first announced the edition Apple Watch, the gold $25,000 Apple Watch, had started thinking of itself and its strength as being its brand more than any product.
Yeah.
Almost a fashion brand.
I don't know if a fashion brand, but I've always
for a long time,
I've always thought that Apple is a design company that articulates its desire to design things and its point of view through technology. I think it's been a long time since they've been, I consider them a technology company. That doesn't mean that they don't make brilliant technology, but I think that what moves them is design. And they're facing kind of a bad mojo coming up because I really think the Apple TV hardware is their ghost of Christmas future when it comes to the iPhone and even the iPad, because there's really almost no reason to buy an Apple TV device, because you can buy something that is even more capable that will also get almost all of the content. Let's rewind the clock to 2018. Every single piece of content that you could possibly get is not through an Apple app. It's going to be through a third-party app, and you can get that on a $40 Chrome stick. It's very or a $40 Roku stick. Very, very easy. And they're really seeing the writing on the wall that there's going to be a time where an iPhone is also going to be negligible. And if they can't let themselves be in a position where they never have a product that is interchangeable with something else. So if they can no longer make a streaming box, okay, they never did make a streaming box that really made a really good convincing case that, yes, you should definitely buy this thing with an Apple logo on it. They can say that, number one, we have content that no one else has, but also, as said before, the idea that we are going to give it to you in a package where you're going to trust us, that of all the companies telling consumers, we're not going to tell you exactly what we're doing or how we're making how our business plan requires you to be complacent, but trust us that we're going to hit you with a much, much blunter stick than anybody else is going to hit you with.
Oliver, you develop only for the Mac, right? Do you have Windows products?
No.
So I'm really curious what a software company thinks when it looks at this, because when you started Boinks, you were writing software for a computer company,
yeah,
right? A company making hardware to run software.
Yeah.
How does it feel making software for a fashion brand or a luxury brand? It's a different business.
It's great.
You don't mind?
No. But with the announcements last month, I was also very confused, and I'm looking at this from like the user interface and design perspective, and the TV app is the strangest thing Apple has ever done, because they created this Apple TV and it was supposed to be this cool thing with the apps on it, and now they have an app with the apps inside it, and so it's like
and not very well represented
it's like why should I start the device and then start an app to get to the content?
Right.
To the content that's already there in other apps.
So. I agree with you 100%, because I know that I exit out of the TV app half the time. Yeah. Not 100% of the time, half the time, which means it's half working, which is the worst kind of working.
For me, it's not working because I have different iCloud and Apple and iTunes accounts. And if you have that, then You know, you see the movie where it says coming up or next up or whatever, and you click on it, and then it says this movie is not available in your country in Amazon or whatever. I was looking at it, but it displays the movie I was watching, so it's kind of it's very confused. So
I think the confusion in the app reflects the confusion Apple is feeling inside
maybe,
its
maybe
business.
That's
right
it.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm not, maybe Apple internally. Because they don't really tell us, but maybe internally they have a coherent plan for all this, but it doesn't look that way.
It seems like Apple is always in sort of a transition, and everything is in chaos, and they're transitioning from one thing to another, and that's kind of that's. I think they have to either accelerate the transitions, or you know maybe be more, consistent. You know, one thing is like the new iMac, which is faster than the iMac Pro,
right,
and cheaper, and it's, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? So,
and Benedict, in his piece, which you're right, Renee, is a very good piece, says this is the nature of an evolving tech space. He says it's a broader narrative about the evolution of tech as we've moved to higher and higher abstraction layers, from a command line to GUIs, then to touch. And from local software to cloud software, some stuff disappears in the lower layers, but new problems appear in the upper layers. It's a confusing space, and I don't think Apple's alone in kind of having lost its way, but I think it's a challenge. And I don't know if deciding, okay, brand, that's it. That's our future. It's the brand. In an era where brand seems to becoming less important, that as consumers become more sophisticated, as information becomes more easily accessed, people are making smarter decisions. And I think consumers who in the past might have said, well, I'll just do Apple and not worry about it, are now saying, well, but do I want to subscribe to this and not that? They're actually doing what Andy's doing. They're trying to make some fiscal decisions that are smarter than just saying, well, I'll buy Tide because that's the best.
I think Apple's brand right now, though, and I think going forward is going to make it really stand out, is privacy.
Brand is less important now than ever.
But if your brand is privacy, I think that makes it more important. It's not that Apple is trying to be its own brand so much, I think, as that it's trying to campaign to the public that privacy is its brand.
The problem we had at Tech TV, I've told this story before, an executive told me this. He said, Leo, advertisers don't like us because brand is the refuge of the ignorant. That a smart consumer isn't just going to buy the same. You know, when I was a kid, you were a Chevy family or you were a Mercedes family. You just bought the same car brand year after year. There was a loyalty to the brand. That seems to be going away because people aren't as ignorant anymore. They want to make good decisions, and they have the information now easily available to make those good decisions. So we had problems at Tech TV because advertisers thought, well, I don't want to put ads on that channel because that's smart people, and they won't fall for it. And my argument was, then what's Apple? Because clearly smart people buy Apple because of the brand. They buy one Mac after another. But I don't know
like
if that's
Apple,
true
Disney,
anymore.
Lego, Nintendo have sort of a special cachet that's based on brand.
But isn't that
products,
wearing?
Nostalgia.
Isn't that wearing
it is,
off?
But you see, like, if you look at brand marketing, I mean, Samsung still spends billions and billions of dollars so that the Samsung name is everywhere.
They
because
just
they
had
know
a terrible, terrible quarter.
But nobody had a good one. So, I mean, like, it's relative to the market. And if you walk into that carrier store, they're still banking a lot of money that you're going to see 800 phones. And maybe you've done research, but you'll immediately recognize the Samsung one. Or at least that's the name you're going to know, and that's the point. It's there. So they're doing it so that you will have to opt out of Samsung rather than opting into somebody else. You'll have to discount them for some reason and then move on rather than them being
in the mix. Isn't that exactly what the iPhone is? The iPhone doesn't innovate in any respect, but people just buy iPhone after iPhone.
Well, so I would argue, like, I think innovation is the most misused word in technology right now, because when you look at, like, even simple things, and I was going over this last week because I was with my friends from Android Central, and they're taking all these amazing Pixel photos, and they're like, the app's not launching. And they're like, oh, look, the update came out, and now it fails to save fewer photos than it used to save. And if Apple said that, they would be annihilated in the press, but it's just part of living with that thing. And when you look at Apple – Like, it doesn't get pressed, but they make a custom storage controller so that you don't fail to save photographs. And they put a ton of effort in doing things like Apple Watch, like AirPods, that doesn't, it's not a folding phone, and they've never been like first to the folding anything or first to any market. But they have so many things that I would term real advantageous innovation that just ends up making a more reliable, more trustworthy, more satisfying product for the end user.
Oh,
and I think that
come
does
on,
pay
Renee.
Off in loyalty.
I think you're what crazy. What are you smoking?
No, I mean,
that's
I,
nuts.
I would say that I could.
How do you like that Apple
up.
Keyboard, that ultra reliable Apple keyboard
but, I mean,
you've
easy.
Been using?
It's like, oh, they screwed up on a keyboard.
Well, but,
I mean,
but
like,
there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that.
Is there?
Renee?
I mean,
yes, there is.
Is there?
Yes, there
I
is.
I would argue that you could factually stack up every issue that Apple's having right now. You'll find more of them in almost every other company, and they're not dealt with as well. And when you look at the market relatively, you take a frustration point to move, but you also take a satisfaction point to stay. And I think one of the reasons why Apple has such high retention rates, and they lose far fewer customers to Android than they gain from Android every year, and they do that in almost every market, it's because they're doing those simple things. They're not doing all of them right. They're not doing all of them well. Not doing all of them timely. But if you actually sit down and make the list, they're doing enough of them that it's letting them increase market share and increase, you know, in most quarters, increase market share and increase revenue, even in maturing markets.
I think Apple succeeds because it's got a brand, but I don't think brand is ultimately going to save anybody in the long run. People are getting smarter. And, you know, I'm fortunate because I can try any phone I want.
Yeah.
And I just use the phone that is the best in that quarter. And there's no winner every year. Right now, the Samsung Galaxy S10 Plus beats Apple iPhone in every respect. And I was very happy with the XS Max. But once I started set up the Samsung, it was not even close.
I think, you know, like, again, 6 months later, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
then another
the next
6 months
iPhone, maybe.
Google and Apple. But we're
but
not
that's
living
my point.
With
is it like brand? And admittedly, most people do go by brand because it's convenient. It's easy. I'm just going
to
get another iPhone.
They also have to live for 3 years or 4 years with the phone they buy. And I think that's a different experience than we get where we move from phone to phone so often.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, we do have our daily drivers. And so we do accumulate experience, a deep experience with one platform, even as we sample other platforms. I would only say that my experience with Android is not what you describe from your conversations with the folks at Android Central. I really can't find a stability difference between my Android phone and a iPhone at this point. I do believe, knowing how the iPhone works internally, that it is going to be more stable in the long run. But the Apple's real difficulty isn't so much that people are stupid or people are getting smarter. It's that the level of craftsmanship in both hardware and software is now so high across the board that you would have to have a certain level of incompetence not to make a phone that works really, really well, that rarely rebounces, rarely gives you a problem. And so it's now above the level where people think that, okay, this is a stable phone no matter which one I buy. And so now Apple has the problem of making sure that they're keeping their existing customers happy, and they continue to create these really wonderful phones every other year that has that feature that really will tempt any fan of any other platform to come on board. So it's the difficulty is that most people aren't like us. We're not necessarily fans. They're not necessarily fans of technology. They buy phones the way that I buy cars. Like, I've got a level that I need to hit. Where is it reliable? Yes. Good fuel mileage? Yes. Is it good condition? Yes. Okay. It could be any of seven different makes, any of seven different models. I'm not going to get nitpicky about how well here's a 10-year study of how the Honda functions over time versus how the Toyota functions over time. And if Apple has really made its business, if they've made its business on making sure that they are 5% better than everybody else, and that 5% won't get them above a certain palpable level of stability or fit and finish compared to their competitors, then Apple now has a hardware problem they didn't have 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think Leo's point about Samsung is really apt. And I think Samsung is getting lost in the shuffle this way, too, because there are so many new and exciting phones come out. But when I was going back and looking, like, again, it's not me. It's Android Central has an article saying I'm fed up with the Pixel. Droid Life has an article saying what the hell is happening with the Pixel. Marquez is like, I'm switching back to the OnePlus because I can't take the Pixel anymore. And that's after the review cycle, and it's not published as much. And, you know, people are unlocking Samsung phones with YouTube videos, and they're beating the the sensor with fingerprints, and all of those stuff are small and insignificant, and people may not care about it. But in sum total, when you talk to a lot of people, that's one of the reasons why they get intense scrutiny on iPhones. They can see every flaw up front. They get beaten up early on in the review cycle. It's probably a lot of the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. But there does seem to be an underlying thread of just trust and reliability that is at least maintaining Apple's image as far as phones are going.
It's a valid point for marketing. Absolutely.
We'll see.
Like you said, Samsung had a terrible quarter too, so it's not getting any easier.
Yeah. No,
it's also significant to know that Pixel, I do think the Pixel is the best Android phone all around as a whole package. But studies just came out a couple years ago looking at who is buying, where are Pixel phone buyers coming from, and 5-1 they are the Pixel is sabotaging Samsung sales, not iPhone sales. So there really is very little compelling reason for a lot of people to switch from an iPhone to Android if they're already happy with the iPhone, including if they're happy with the price of the iPhone.
Well, it seems to me like maybe Apple is at a comparative point like Microsoft was a couple of years ago, when a lot of people stayed with Windows just because they were locked into the ecosystem. And I see a lot of people, telling me that they're using Macs or iPhones only because they invested in the platform and the iCloud stuff. And so it's like, it seems to be for them to be more inconvenient to move to a different platform than to stay on the iPhone platform or the Mac platform. And that, I think, is something maybe Apple is not aware of, or if they are, then
no,
they don't
I think
care
they've
a
cultivated
lot.
That.
Yes, yeah,
they've cultivated it. Well, they wanted to make it difficult. They want an ecosystem.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Now, I mean you have to look at what happened
there
to Microsoft.
Yeah.
I mean they've rebounded, but they really crashed because
they had to pivot.
Because once his lock-in went away, or this perceived lock-in went away. So it was for the IT department, this was easier to just let people use an iPhone than to make them use Windows, the Windows phone. And so, so the whole Microsoft thing crashed and burned. And I think Apple is sort of at this point where it's fairly dangerous for them, to assume that just because they have a lot of money, that's gonna, you know, make sure they and a high market valuation to make sure that this ensures their you know, continuing success. And
I think that's why you see them thrashing around a little bit. I think they understand that Microsoft was very fortunate or very clever to make that pivot.
Yeah,
bring your own device killed Windows because all of a sudden IT department couldn't say no, you can't. You can't use an iPhone.
Well, for a while, I thought having the same people at the top of the company is sort of a guarantee for stability. But I think maybe some of the people, most of the executive team, has been there way too long now. So
I think you have to give them some credit for at least, maybe they're a fish on a hook, but at least they're squirming. They're not.
They're smart people. I mean, they have to know some things. But for example, the whole keyboard disaster, where it seems like they're totally unaware of the real problem, because most people don't take their laptops to repair the keyboards, and they look at the numbers and see, okay, like 0.5% of the laptops come back for repairs.
So and everybody's so happy. Everybody's
happy, but nobody's happy because nobody brings in his laptop for repairs if it takes like, what is it now, 2 weeks to
and
get the machine back.
Yeah.
And so I think some of the, I mean, you know, it's just my feeling is that it's time for a couple of changes there. You know,
I feel like there is an imminent crisis. I agree, and I also feel like Apple's recognizing it. But it's a challenge for any company. It was kind of a miracle that Microsoft was able to turn that corner.
But they only were because they made big changes to the management.
They got rid of Steve Ballmer. Yeah. All right, let's take a little break.
An iPhone, right? Wasn't he in that picture they got at the basketball game?
Was he at the Clippers game? Was he using an iPhone?
Yeah,
that would be ironic. Like. Here's the guy who laughed when the iPhone came out and said, nobody will buy that.
Oh, he had to, right?
Well, that's true. That was his job. Hey, it's great to have Oliver Bryden back here of Boinx Software, BOINX.com. I want to ask you about NAB. He's in town for NAB, the big broadcasting show. Renee Ritchie, also here from iMore. Renee will go down with a ship, right? You're gonna.
No, I'll swear. I was all in on Microsoft, and they stopped. If Apple stops serving my needs, I will quit so fast.
All right. Good. All right. I finally bought a ThinkPad X1 Extreme because nice. I was waiting for the 16-inch MacBook Pro. I was waiting for Apple to say, "Hey, we've got a great new keyboard design." Neither of those things will happen this year. So. Unfortunately, I have to go to the dark side. Lori Gill, also here, managing editor at iMore.com. Andy Anacco from Boston Public Radio. Great to have all three of you. If you ever come to the studio, did we make you fill this out, Oliver?
No.
I think you're a guest, so you don't have to. But all of our visitors in our audience signed in via Envoy. How was that experience? It's not if you'd come before, and I think you guys had. You probably remember that 18-page legal document that we made you read and sign. Envoy has replaced that. A better way to welcome guests to your modern lobby and be ready for whatever comes through the door. Envoy Visitors is one of the many apps. This is Envoy Visitors. It's an iPad app. We're running it on a nice iPad mini. And it's a great way when visitors come to your business, you see our logo, tap to sign in. They sign in on an iPad kiosk, enter their details. They sign our legal disclaimers saying if you trip and fall over a wire, we didn't do it. Or NDAs. In fact, when you go to almost any Silicon Valley company now, you'll be signing in on Envoy. Then Envoy notifies their host. It automatically alerts the employee they're visiting that their guest is here, saves you time and hassle, and improves your security. Your employee knows who's coming and when. No more surprises in the lobby. And you can even say, hey, a VIP is coming and make sure that everybody knows the VIP has arrived.
That's happened when I came.
Sure. Oh, Oliver's here. We knew. When Oprah comes to our studio, we will be ready.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to say, we will be ready.
You get an Envoy.
Envoy also has we have this on here too, our delivery app. So when the delivery guy comes, the delivery log. Will automatically notify the employee that their package is at the front desk. This is just more efficient. It's a better way to do it. Smart security that isn't intimidating. Your guests actually enjoy. There's no paper logbook, which is too bad because when Columbo comes, he can't say, I want to see your desk calendar there. Actually, it's much more useful. You can search through stuff. You can sign in unlimited visitors. Yes, you can print customized badges. Even notify security or administrators if unattended guests are wandering the building. It works with your existing security systems, so you can give people Wi-Fi access, you can check IDs, emergency notifications, and you'll have the data on who comes to the office, when, and more. I love Envoy. Envoy Visitors works with the tools you already use, so those notifications can come through Slack, it can save to G Suite, Box, it works with Salesforce Chatter, everything that you use already. It's designed to help companies of all kinds and sizes, even those in highly regulated industries, meet security and compliance requirements. Nike uses Envoy. Pinterest uses Envoy. Spotify uses Envoy. Over 30 million visitors have been welcomed and signed in to the modern lobby. We're so thrilled to have Envoy. I think you will be too. Protect your people, your property, and your ideas without being less welcoming. The welcoming way with Envoy. See why 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy to make a great first impression, including Twit. Go to envoy.com/Twit, envoy.com/Twit, and you can get a free trial right now. Envoy.com/Twit. Oh, Deutsche Bank uses Envoy. We'll be subpoenaing those records any day now. Thank you, Envoy. this is a better way to sign in. Now we got to put this back at the front desk so Mo can use it. when somebody shows up. I don't want to be hard on Apple. I just I'm a little frustrated, I have to admit, by the current Mac situation. And I have to say that in hindsight, that event with all the movie stars was something less than satisfying. It was more confusing and disturbing, I think, than ultimately.
I think everything else that Apple is doing in terms of services makes a lot of sense to me. I think Apple Arcade makes a lot of sense. These are developers that already exist in the world, and Apple is giving a platform or a spot for them and sort of making it special and exclusive and saying, you know, for a little bit of extra money, we can invite you into this world where we make sure that the developers that are putting their games in this particular sphere are top notch, and we're helping, you know, pay for that. And then the news app is similar to that. You know, buy into these magazines, and you've got this sort of network of media that you can really dig into. But Apple didn't make these magazines themselves. They didn't create the content for these magazines. They're not creating the content for the apps. So I think to me that makes a lot of sense. I think very specifically, I'm still struggling with the TV related, and I think maybe when it comes out, we're going to understand it better, and we're going to know what Apple's doing with it. I think we just weren't given enough information to really like get what's happening or where they're going with it. And I think that's why we're reading a lot of negative information about it. A lot of people saying that, I think I read, I don't remember the article, but that Disney Plus is definitely the winner when it comes to the two services that are coming out at the end of this year. Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus are coming out later this year around the same time.
We should mention that AT&T has sold its stake in Hulu to Disney. So Disney now is 100%. No.
They didn't sell to Disney. They sold it back to Hulu. NBC Universal, for instance, didn't want Disney to get an even larger stake in the service.
Disney now does not control Hulu. I thought that was the case.
They own 60% of the shares.
Okay. Yes, exactly. But it's important to know that AT&T didn't sell it directly to Disney. They sold it basically it was Hulu buying itself back, and they've yet to decide how those percentage points are going to be distributed amongst Hulu's partners.
So they're going to try to distribute it in a way that Disney 60% is not.
How many services does Iger need?
Yeah, that's exactly the problem that we're going to be facing. That it's very much in now that Disney owns Fox, so many Fox programs are important parts of the Hulu service. How long is it going to take before Disney says that we'd much rather have 100% of the profits from The Simpsons and Bob's Burgers and Family Guy by having it as part of Disney Plus than 60% of what it makes for Hulu?
So a year ago, Hulu was evenly divided among Disney, Fox, and Comcast. But then Disney bought Fox. And AT&T, so Disney, Fox, that's 60%. AT&T had 10, Comcast had, was that, another 30. So now it's Disney 60, Comcast 30. And there's this 10 points, which could be awarded to Comcast, but it still would be only 40.
Comcast owns NBC Universal, is that
right? So, almost, I mean, Disney controls Hulu at this point. Is that correct?
Yes and no. They would be if they did decide to unilaterally pull all of the Fox content or basically every piece of content that they necessarily own off of the Hulu channel, they would have to explain to regulators and to their partners why they weren't just trying to kill Hulu. They would have to make sure that they could defend that. They need to have to make to defend that choice to the government and to their fiscal partners. So
why has Apple not done a deal with Disney of some kind? I thought they were tight.
Disney doesn't need them.
You know what I would love, though, is if Disney Plus and TV Plus were combined into one low-cost streaming service that you could watch.
Plus. $7.50 a month.
Yeah.
I'd spend 50 cents extra for that.
Less than that $7 price has to be an entry price, right? They're not going to. It's too low for them.
I was thinking that, too. I don't know, but my immediate thought was, $7.99 for the next 2 or 3 years, and then it'll go up to $9.99.
Yeah, look what Google just killed me with YouTube TV. That I started at the very beginning. It was $35. I've been paying $35 a month, and they just sent me a note saying, oh, by the way, it's going to be $50.
I thought, like, yeah, that's a big jump, too.
Going up as well.
So is that so when I saw the presentation where they brought out Oprah as the new Messiah.
Do you know who Oprah is?
Yeah, I know who Oprah is.
She's known in Germany.
I think I remember that she tried to, you know, when she left the major network.
She started her own network.
She started her own network, and that didn't, obviously didn't work out so.
Cable channel. Yeah.
It didn't work out so well. So now she's trying to sort of get back. So I wonder if that is sort of like a model for what's going to happen to Disney Plus. I mean, they are going to try to do their own thing, and then maybe.
Yeah, but Disney has a lot of content.
Yeah,
Disney has
Star
Wars. Disney has Marvel. Disney.
It has 92% of my childhood, Leo.
Yeah, it owns Renee Ritchie's childhood. That's better than anything.
Well, it has the Magic Kingdom. It has Muppets. It has Fox. It has Star Wars. It has Marvel.
It doesn't have DeGrasse High School, though, right?
It might. I don't know if it has DeGrasse or not.
Yeah, but I think the current kids, a lot of their childhood is on YouTube.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure if that's...
This is a really interesting world we're in, where everything is up in the air because of this new generation that didn't grow up watching TV at all. Yeah.
So there's so much content now, and Netflix does their own content. You can't watch it all, and so maybe, you know, if it's only available for an extra price, then people will just not watch it. I mean, it's like, do you have to watch that stuff or don't?
It seems a little retro for Apple to decide we're going to launch a streaming TV service
today.
YouTube
is getting out of original programming, right? Which upsets me because I loved Cobra Kai. But they're not going to do original content anymore.
YouTube is just as confused as everybody else. They've gone from groin kick videos to original content to quality content
and
to I don't know what.
They just announced a Marques Brownlee show today, which
Oh, really? Interesting. What's that?
Retro Tech. He's going to review the original Game Boy.
Like, that's a show,
technology
though?
It's going to be a YouTube original. He's going to review technology, I think, that came out before he was born.
See, what I think happens, and I think what Oprah's doing is... All of these people are saying, well, let me just cash out. Who will write a big check?
Give me some Apple money.
Let me just cash out. And I don't think Oprah has a long-term investment in the success of Apple TV Plus any more than Marques Brownlee really cares whether Retro Tech is a long-term thing. Let me just show me the money.
It's weird. The thing is, I think that we're not talking about audience share or audience size. We're talking about audience, period. That the value of celebrity or the value of creating content is the idea that you're going to have a group of people that are going to watch you no matter what, that if they see your name on something, if they see something posted to your channel, you are going to watch that no matter what it is. It's no longer good enough to have a Big Bang Theory sort of show, which is a good show, but I would say that there are very few people who are so passionate about it that they schedule their Thursday nights around making sure that they don't miss an episode. Whereas for me, it's the reason why I said that was an interesting choice for Marques Brownlee to be doing a Retro Tech show is that now he's going to be competing with creators like Techmoan and other channels that are really, really good at this. This is something that he decided that he liked to do before there was any sort of an audience for it. Just like there are so many people who might want to create an auto channel. Again, you're competing with Project Binky. You're competing with 3 or 4 or 5 years of a fascinating project with people who absolutely know what they're doing, and they're bringing not people who might be dipping in every now and then, but people who will absolutely be seeing every single episode. If you can tell me what day of the week the new Winter Garden Marble Machine video comes out on, that is exactly the difference between new style viewership and old style viewership.
I'm just going to go home and read a book. I can't even.
WandaVision.
I don't even.
Why would they name a series WandaVision?
I don't know.
I want an answer, Bob Iger.
I don't know any of these shows you children are talking about. I don't know. I have no idea.
What is YouTube? I've alienated someone who's older than me.
Leo, is the 13-year-old. Is it 9-year-old or 13-year-old?
Does this happen to every generation where they just get to a point where they go, I don't know what the hell the kids are talking about?
Yeah. My godkids came up and told me how to use the Nintendo Switch. Yeah, my godkids told me how to fix something on the Nintendo Switch, and I literally felt myself fixing my parents' VCR.
Oh, God.
Just that's the moment that happened.
That's the moment. Well, speaking of moments, there's a big breaking story that just came in. I'm going to take a break and we're going to come back. Apple and Qualcomm have settled. Their trial began yesterday with jury selection just in over the wire, a settlement. And just to give you an idea of who won and who lost, Apple stock up 1%, Qualcomm stock up over 13% at last check. So we'll get the details on that in just a second. But first, I am getting old. Our show today brought to you by Roman. It's a guy's health brand that I am very actually pleased and proud to be advertising. Now, Lori, you can close your ears to this. Guys, we know how it, well, you probably know, Lori. Actually, women know this better than guys do. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. You get a knee injury, you get a bad back. Guys, you just want to rub some dirt in it and go on, right? The last thing most men will do is go see the doctor. And it's usually their wives who are saying, honey, we got to do something about this. Well, it's true for another thing that happens to guys, ED, erectile dysfunction. 70% of guys, this is according to a recent study, who experience ED do not do anything about it. They don't get treatment. They just rub some dirt in it. Fortunately, there is a better way, and this is awesome. It's private, it's secure, and it's effective. A secure, simple, seamless way to get checked out by a real doctor, board certified in your state, and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where you can chat with a licensed U.S. physician who can treat ED, and if safe and appropriate. And this is not some pro forma thing. This is a real physician who, if safe and appropriate, they'll really talk to you. It will ship medication right to your door. There's no waiting room. There's no awkward face-to-face conversation. No kid at the pharmacy saying, I need a price check. This is in private. But honestly, this is a real solution I want you to consider. You can handle everything discreetly online. It is not age specific. It happens to everybody, but there is a solution. All you have to do is go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak. Complete the online visit. Chat with a doctor in your state. It's a doctor in your state. They do it state by state. If the doctor decides it'd be safe and appropriate, they'll ship the real stuff right to your door in discreet and unmarked packaging. Guys, it's time to stop rubbing dirt in it. Go online. Get checked by a doctor. You wouldn't walk around with a toothache, would you? You know, you'd go to a dentist. Well, ED is a problem guys get. They don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy. Take care of it. And I got to tell you, it feels really good to do so. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak. They offer free second-day delivery and no online fee when you go to GetRoman.com/MacBreak. So you can get that checkup for free. GetRoman.com/MacBreak for a free online visit with a doctor in your state. Find out. GetRoman.com/MacBreak. Okay, Laura, you can take the beans out of your ears now. We're done talking guy stuff.
You notice I left the room for that.
Did you? Did you turn bright red? Actually, this ad is really for women to tell their guys. Dude. Apple and Qualcomm, the trial began yesterday with jury impanelment. According to CNBC, this came out just a few minutes ago. They've settled. They announced in a press release the settlement includes a payment from Apple to Qualcomm, as well as a chipset supply agreement, which would be a great relief for Apple. Maybe not so much for Intel, but Apple has been having trouble getting those Qualcomm chips, went to Intel. Intel had to have a crash program to make the radios and so forth. Apple stock up less than 1%. Qualcomm, I'll have to check that again, though. This is an old story now. Qualcomm up 13%. This was one of those things that could have gone on for a decade more. It was ugly. There were billions of dollars in claims in both directions. In November, Qualcomm CEO Steve Mollenkopf said he thought the two companies were on the doorstep to a settlement. Tim Cook said, nuh-uh.
Where are you again?
Nuh-uh. So the full press release is short. I will read it in its entirety now. Do not go get a sandwich. Qualcomm and Apple today announced an agreement to dismiss all litigation between the two companies worldwide. The settlement includes a payment from Apple to Qualcomm. The companies have also reached a six-year license agreement effective April 1st, 2019, including a two-year option to extend and a multi-year chipset supply agreement. And that's it.
Yeah. We got to go through this again in 8 years.
Yeah, in 8 years we'll be back. No, I think it's over now for sure, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That must have been a really late-breaking development, because it seems more often than not when these things have been in the works for a long time, they've already lined up who they're going to leak the information to make sure that the background information about this and other details that they don't actually have to support in public get out there. The fact that there is a one-paragraph summation plus ever since the break, I've been doing nothing but looking at news sources. Yeah. and every single news item is entirely about how this is affecting Intel stock, Qualcomm stock, Apple stock. Qualcomm is up 16 points. Intel took a big dip, but seems to have recovered. Apple is up just a little bit, but yeah, it looks like there are a lot of Qualcomm made $9.7 billion just on the basis of people knowing that they've settled their disagreements with Apple.
Yeah.
So that shows you who were the.
Here's
was
the,
it the Huawei thing? Was it the Huawei offer to help that put them all over the edge?
here's the Qualcomm chart for this is today. I think you can see exactly when the announcement was made. The market is not closed, right? It's got another hour to go. So this kind of surprising they would make this announcement before the market closed.
And also, we don't know the details, and it's amazing the market would react that strongly without at least some form of details.
Yeah.
We don't know that.
Well, yeah, I think the assumption here then, based on the way the market is going, is that Qualcomm will continue to be able to charge the prices that it charges, which is a huge benefit to Qualcomm, and it's not necessarily any kind of benefit to phone makers like Apple. So I think, yeah, I think the settlement is a big deal for Qualcomm, because they can continue sort of as business as usual into the future, based on the fact that Apple, that the two of them came to a settlement. Obviously, we don't know what was in the settlement. If the settlement was something along the lines of Qualcomm will now reduce the prices that it charges for its chips, or it will no longer require a license for the chipsets, I don't know. But I think the implication is that Qualcomm doesn't have to reduce its prices, which is a big boon for
that. I'm not sure that that's the case. I'm sure that, you know, remember, Apple's stock price is conditioned by a lot of stuff. Qualcomm is a little simpler. And honestly, I think just the removal of this hanging over Qualcomm's head, no matter what the deal is, and the fact that Apple will continue to buy Qualcomm chips is enough to say for the market
to say
that's good news.
Does that mean Apple has to put their modem in the drawer now? Would that have to be part of
it? Well, that's what I wonder, you know.
At least for the next 6 years.
Do you think we'll know? Do you think that'll get leaked out? I guess it has to, because we'll know what chips are going in.
I think that we've just seen Apple announce, here's how long it will take us to develop our own modem chip.
6 to 8 years.
No, less than 6 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm being serious there. If they had something that they thought that they could launch in a year or two, I have a hard time believing that they would have settled this. It really shows you how important a Qualcomm chipset is to any company that wants to launch a 5G phone anytime in the next 2 years.
It's hard to match.
Yeah, and isn't that where? Go ahead.
Isn't that where we're sort of getting into that friend sort of specifics here? Of like once a company is making something that becomes so ubiquitous within technology that they have to start kind of navigating toward this sort of fair competition amongst the rest of the other tech people. It really does seem like Qualcomm is kind of stepping into that friend sort of realm when it comes to their modems.
Qualcomm has stepped right in it already. They're being chased after by every law internationally regarding anti-competitive behavior. They're required to make sure that they make their technology available to all comers on a sort of equal-ish basis. I mean, they don't have to give the same price to everybody, but they can't simply decide that this is because this is such an important technology, they can't say that, well, we're only going to allow Huawei, we're only going to allow Samsung to have access to these chips, or mm-hmm. we're going to charge double, triple, quadruple at the drop of a hat. And so this will also help them out on that score, where other companies are going to maybe think twice about suing them if even Apple decided to fold, given their war chest, given their resources, and given their ability to simply take a hit for a couple of years. That's got to send some chills to anybody garage building their own phone.
This is on the eve of the trial, right? So who knows? It could have been that they saw that Major League Baseball player in the jury and they went, oh, no, we got to settle. But more likely, I think Apple did a calculus. I think you're exactly right that they said, look, 5G, it could be something as simple as we need 5G in the next iPhone. We're not going to have it ready. We've got to get Qualcomm chips. That's just the way it is. It could have been that kind of thing that ultimately was the final pressure.
It's also possible that, you know, because they're going to have to meet both ways, because Qualcomm's got to want to settle too, and Apple's not paying them, and they've complained bitterly about how much money that's costing
them.
Well,
that's one reason the stock price went up so much. They're going to get some of that money finally.
And being a silicon merchant is not, like, it sounds like it's profitable, but Qualcomm has had a lot of trouble making non-phone chips profitably over the last few years, because literally they did not have the money to do things like mobile chips at any scale at the price that manufacturers are willing to pay for it. And if they get a huge influx of capital, that's probably hugely beneficial to them as well.
So we don't know how much. The only substantive thing we know is that Apple did write a check, could have been for $1, but more importantly, agreed to buy 6 years of Qualcomm chips for the next 6 years and with an option for two more. I think that's really the bottom line on this. And
all I know is that I no longer have to spend the next 8 months to 3 years reading PDFs of court filings.
I know. Hallelujah, huh?
And pretending to understand.
I was actually looking forward to this. I wanted to see how this was going to go. I was really looking. I'm very fascinated with this kind of idea of these tech companies that are kind of when they get too big, and there's this sort of like the fair use kind of idea of when does a company get to protect its assets and when does it have to kind of be a little bit more equal. So I was actually hoping for some closure on this particular thing, because I think like both Apple and Qualcomm had some pretty good arguments from just the information that I've read about it. And I don't know. So we just have to wait for the next company to jump on that board to find out what's really going to happen. It's a bummer for me.
It could be very, usually this kind of thing is settled before you go to trial. The threat of going to trial and of discovery often is sufficient to bring the parties together. It wasn't in this case. It may be that once the trial began, the judge, set the two parties down and said, I don't want this trial to go on. You need
to
settle.
Bad for both of you.
Yeah. It may be that Apple saw something in Qualcomm's presentation or Qualcomm. Actually, I think Apple presented first. I'm not sure, you know, what happened, but something happened, obviously. Maybe they looked at the jury and said, we're going to lose. But something happened on Monday that caused them to come to the table and settle today. So,
That's actually a good observation, because sometimes a judge will not direct to the two parties to settle, but indicate that the situation as it stands right now says that now is a really great time, wink, wink, for you to settle before we move forward for reasons that are apparent to everybody inside this courtroom.
That will take
the bravado out of a lot of people.
Yeah. I think that's the case. I don't have a lot of experience, but I have a little bit of experience with this. And I kind of know, you know, the stages of how this happens. Of course, these companies have millions to spend on attorneys, but these fees get high. And I think really one of the things that's most scary for these companies, I know it has been in the past for Apple, is discovery. And, you know, that's already happened. So I'm not sure what happened. I think it's very intriguing.
The lawyers won, Leo.
The lawyers always win, Renee. That's a given.
Yeah.
I think you could say Qualcomm probably had a victory. I think that's what the market is telling us.
They had more to lose, so yeah, this is a victory for them. But you've just made me a little bit sad because we learned so much about the development of the iPhone through the discovery process on the lawsuit
of right.
Samsung. So
that's
now
right.
I actually maybe a little am a little bit sad.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one thing Apple realized: there is collateral damage in any lawsuit. And Apple, a company that embraces secrecy more than any other, might have just well said, "Yeah, let's stop before we have to get testimony." Wow.
Like an era is over.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not as sad as Notre Dame burning, but it's the end of an era. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
Like the Nokia patent settlements of Aught 10.
It is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
I guess all those lawyers are going to have to go to work like a Genius Bars or something. They got to be giving billable hours somewhere.
Cautionary tale, if you'd read, maybe you read on Reddit that you can bake a laptop to reflow the solder, don't.
No.
This is a crazy.
Well, I don't know. Just don't turn it up past the required.
Yeah. In fact, I think the conclusion here is make sure your temperature in your oven is accurate before you try to do this.
Yeah. Reflowing solder is not as a technique is not stupid, but usually it's done by visibly. Basically, the story was this guy he dropped his MacBook Air. Clearly, it was not functioning anymore, so he felt he had little to lose. The reflowing solder technique means that you visibly inspect the board, and if you see a crack or a break in the solder, you can use a tiny heat gun or a soldering gun to simply melt the solder in place and cause that breach, that crack, to flow back together. I'm not sure that I would do.
Don't put it in a toaster oven.
Put it in a toaster oven. And then what do you say? Gosh, idea. Things are going great at 160 degrees. I'll just crank it up to 180 degrees.
Let's see.
Twice as well.
What could possibly go wrong? You make an excellent point, Andy. Repair shops that do this kind of repair will use a very targeted heat gun and very carefully heat areas to reflow the solder. The idea of baking the whole motherboard. Although, as the guy points out, he's making fun of himself in the blog post. He said, at least five people on the internet did this with success.
Andy, you're probably the best person to ask a little bit more detail about this since you do a lot of DIY computer stuff. Why did anyone even come up with this idea that you could put your motherboard in an oven, period? Like, I get that, the kind of loosening of the solder, but it just seems so ridiculous.
It's this website. From 2014, how I resurrected my MacBook Pro by putting it in the oven.
Yeah, again, it's a recognized technique. If you are bold and if you feel as though you have nothing to lose, not the technique of putting it in the oven. It's just the idea. It's just the idea of doing this cautiously, carefully, and appropriately is just too much for me to handle. I like this idea. I like this idea of picking up tips on how to fix a $2,000 laptop off of like a 15-second looping GIF or Instagram. It's like no. I don't think iFixit will sell you a toaster oven and a PDF of instructions on how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, this is hysterical.
I'm really glad that you wanted to talk about this one just because it made me laugh so hard to read this. And I think that the writer actually has a really great angle. The way he or she describes the process is pretty funny, too.
I think it's essentially an acknowledgement that it wasn't going to come back. So,
even if it didn't work, which it didn't.
The most interesting part of any process like this is when you've done everything that a rational human will do and you realize that you're now between there is zero. If I just throw this away or put this in a closet, there is zero chance of this working again. if I put it in the oven now, there is a 0.01% chance or a non-zero chance. And it will be an interesting data point as it is a well-written blog post. He makes the point that it was well out of Apple care. It was going to cost him at least $800 to $1,000 for a logic board replacement or a high enough amount of money that it's like, what's the point of not buying an entirely new laptop if that's the cost of the fix? And if it had worked, oh my God, he would have been a legend.
It's true.
I put keyboards in the dishwasher knowing that there is, you know, maybe a 50-50 chance they'll be DOA, but sometimes it works.
Why would you put your keyboard in the dishwasher?
I mean, it's only $20 to buy a new keyboard. It just cleans it out. I wouldn't put the Butterfly 3.
There's a chance it'll be better, Leo.
There's a chance it'll be clean.
Give it a try.
Put it in an autoclave.
You can't do it with a MacBook because it's hard to get that keyboard unglued from the battery. And, you know, you don't really want to put your battery through the dishwasher. I know that much. No. I'm not an idiot.
Safety first, kids.
Angela Arendts is gone. She has left the building. Yeah. Yesterday was her last day at Apple. The CEO of Burberry, Apple famously hired away 5 years ago to run retail. On the weekend, Apple, this is kind of cold. They removed her profile from their leadership page. She's gone. We don't know what she's going to do. New personal and professional pursuits. And, of course, former head of HR, Deidre O'Brien, vice president of people, will take over. She's now senior vice president of retail and people.
She launched both the physical and the online store. My God, they're so...
They could have worded that title a little bit better.
SVP.
Retail and people should not be that close together.
Retail and people. Retail is made of people, don't you know? Oddball story we reported on iOS today from 9 to 5 Mac. Apple warns iPad Pro users of bizarre interference issue between Apple Pencil and car key fobs. Turns out if you have the new iPad Pro and Pencil and you're charging the Pencil and it comes in proximity to your touchless, you know, key fob, that it can interfere with it. Signal interference between your Pencil and your car's keyless entry device might prevent you from unlocking your car. Apple's solution, take the Pencil off the iPad. Yeah, stop using your car. You need the charge. Store your Pencil separately. Actually, that's good advice. It also drains the battery.
And interferes with air power.
It does tell you a little bit about how much RF is coming off of that thing.
Yeah.
Yes, the inverse square law. If it's absolutely in contact, that's nice. But every millimeter you bring it apart from the actual source inside the device reduces by what, half, or is it?
Yeah, it's inverse. Yeah, half. Yeah, inverse of the square. So really, that means there's quite a bit of RF. And I did see a couple of pictures, I think on Reddit, of Apple Pencils with kind of brown marks, or almost look like burn marks, where they were on the top of the iPad. I feel like there's heating going on. There's some stuff out there.
Well, inductive charging, like the charging creates heat. That's the whole gambit.
And I guess
this is part of the reason why air power doesn't exist anymore, is because of how powerful it was. This is kind of a tiny version of it.
Who wouldn't be able to drive their cars?
No, keeping Apple employees' cups of coffee warm on desks all across the spaceship campus.
Mozilla calling Apple out, and I'm curious what you all think of this one. The bug in Apple's latest marketing campaign. The new slogan, privacy is that iPhone. I don't even know what that means, but
I read through this.
It's like new Selena now. It's a strange slogan.
It feels like they don't know how that, like, it feels like they're talking about a basic feature that they just do not know how it understand, like, don't understand how it works, and decided to press ahead anyway.
So I think it's really a case of, maybe, in my opinion, Apple not telling us exactly what's going on here. Because the Switch says you can opt out of interest-based ads in the App Store and Apple News. But what it really does is, and there is, it does say this, if you go into settings, is reset the unique ID. And Mozilla's point is they've started a petition to get Apple to do that automatically on a regular basis, maybe monthly, because having the same ID for years on your Apple device allows people to create a quite
but
a.
It- It doesn't, because like this is like they fundamentally misunderstand what this technology is. All this is a device identifier. It's not related to your account in any way, and all it does is work on the App Store ads and on the news ads. It doesn't go to any third parties ever. So there's nobody who can build a profile off you based on these tokens. It reads to me like Mozilla is desperately trying to get into the privacy narrative and didn't bother to actually read up on it. And it's so weird. I kind of want Don Melton to go back and put all those not safe for work words he painstakingly took out of the Mozilla code base before it went public.
So let me get this clear. The Apple ID, which Mozilla implies does go to advertisers, does not go to advertisers.
My understanding, and I read Apple Insider's coverage, and I think there was at least two others who dug deep into it, and it does not. And it is strictly for App Store ads, and my reading at least, strictly for App Store ads and news, Apple News ads. And Apple doesn't even share that with the developers or the news publishers.
So that's much less concerning, obviously. If it were a unique identifier, like, for instance, Verizon got in trouble for on Verizon phones that went to third parties, then those third parties could amass information about your travels on with the iPhone, but only Apple's getting
that. Account, it would be nervous because I wouldn't want them to know what I'm doing on a whole bunch of different devices. Not that I have anything to hide, but I just think privacy should be the default. But it's literally locked to that device, and it has no idea if there's an iPad or an Apple Watch sitting anywhere near it either.
Well, okay, locked to that device doesn't reassure me completely because your iPhone goes with you everywhere and does everything. But sure. It does reassure me if it only is available to Apple in those two apps. That's not as significant.
That's my read of it.
Okay.
It's just every time that we talk about privacy, particularly when we talk about the advantages of Apple's form of privacy, which is much, much better than anybody else's, unfortunately, it skips over the fact that what we need is every single company doing any sort of transaction over the internet, including advertising companies, being just as strict and just as committed to privacy as Apple is. Because it's great to have this device ID, and it's great to point to ways that which people are trying to get around it. But even if it were 100% secure and 100% fail-proof, there are still so many different device fingerprinting technologies out there that will try to figure out that, oh, well, this person has made the choice to turn off this feature. So they're communicating to us that they don't want to be tracked. That's great. If we can fingerprint this person's device, we will add them to our database of marketing people who don't want to be tracked. So it's every time I feel as though I'm feeling too good about the world, I will Google something like mobile device fingerprinting and look at stuff I hadn't seen in the past couple of months and said, oh, that is actually kind of evil the way that they're doing that. So
yeah. All right, good. So I'm reassured. I knew Renee, you would have the answer on this one. That's why I wanted to.
I'm super interested in why Mozilla is doing this, so I'm going to keep looking into that.
Yeah, I mean, I credit Mozilla, but it sounds like they're misunderstanding what Apple's doing with that ID. If it's not widely available, then it's not a privacy concern. Because Apple knows who you are.
But they go to great pains to make sure, when you talk to them about differential privacy, for example, they've been working on that since they announced it to make it better. And they'll even do things like if you're a super user and you're using stuff way too much for them to successfully anonymize you, or you're in such a sparse location that there's no way to effectively anonymize you, they'll just remove you from the pool because they would rather do that than you having any less privacy profile through their analytics. I mean, they really do not want your stuff.
I am excited about iOS 13. You still do, Oliver. Is iStop Motion is iOS? What else is iOS?
Yeah. iStop Motion. We've got a product called Photo Presenter for the iPhone and iPad. Allows you to do an ad hoc photo presentation.
So I'm excited about the iPad, but I think I'm not alone in this. The new iPad Pro, as great as the hardware is held back a little bit by the antiquity of iOS. I'm sure you can't talk too much about future iOS's. I don't know.
I don't know anything about it.
That's what I thought. Okay. So I'll have to go by what they say at 9 to 5 Mac. iOS 13, and you've said this before, Renee, we knew this, that iOS 12, which had apparently been intended to make the iPad Pro more of a computing device, Apple decided not to at the last minute. They said, let's make this be the bug fix version and iOS 13 the new version. And now we're starting to hear some leaks about iOS 13. Dark mode, ho-hum, but some interesting multitasking features, upgrades to Safari and Mail, and an iPad unique undo gesture, which certainly would be welcome among many things to make the iPad more useful.
It's weird when you look at all these things that are supposedly going to the next version of iOS. It seems as like detachable panels and making an app essentially being able to be a multi-windowed app all of itself. The new gestures for I can't remember exactly what the sequence is, but how do you do like a multiple options selection with just one hand, or 18 fingers of one hand? It just seems like when they try to implement features like that, you want to ask the follow-up question: do you feel like this is the point to add trackpad support to the iPad? It feels as though you're writing something for a conventional laptop to basically give it conventional laptop interface features without the benefit of having an actual trackpad or having a keyboard that is implied with the device, as opposed to an accessory that they'd kind of like you not to have to use. So I'm wondering if they really are putting as much investment into making the iPad line their version of the sub-$1,000 laptop and or their replacement for all MacBooks to come. I wonder if that we're not going to see an iOS 15. Okay, we now have limited trackpad supporting these specific Apple trackpads and with these specific gestures. That's going to be conditional upon app support, but it will be the thing that will make people finally decide that a $1,000 or even a $1,300 iPad Pro is what they want, and not a $1,500 MacBook or an $800 Windows notebook.
I think the problems of iOS in terms of can I use it for real work go much deeper than dark mode or undo gestures or stuff like that. and one of the things that the big question is how will they deal with this I have a MacBook Pro and an iPad Pro, and they are almost the same size and width same size and weight, and why do I have to carry both?
Right.
And it's sort of this: do we want to go iPad, and then we'll have to make it much more like a Mac, do we still have the Mac around, and then what's the place of iPad in this thing?
Have you looked at developing with Marzipan and whether you
can? I think that's not going to solve the problem, because Marzipan is just for like making it easy for certain types of apps, mostly probably enterprise apps, to be able to be developed for both platforms. And I think they do that because they because they know this problem is that, how do you make sure that if you make an app, it's most cost effective to have it both working on the work machine and the play machine. So, right. And I think I'm a big fan of the touch interface in iPad, and ever since it came out. Every time, every new iOS version, every new sort of generation of iPads, I try to move, or at least partly move my work over to the iPad, and I give up after 2 minutes.
Photo editing is the one thing that I feel like I can do on the iPad.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe music mixing.
Yeah, I think like for photographers, taking an iPad into the field and then being able to do quick manipulation of the photos, a big benefit. But that's a niche.
It's a small market.
Niche use case, right?
It's the one reason I would take an iPad Pro and a laptop is so I could do Lightroom and do quick triage in Lightroom on the iPad Pro, and then.
So I brought the iPad on this trip, and I haven't used it.
A non-touch bar MacBook.
No, this is a small travel thing, and the touch bar is like, it's a big.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
So one
this
of the
it's one of the symptoms, right? Where Apple designs something and it's not really clear what it's supposed to be and what it's for, and you know, making a hardware designer the chief of user interface is maybe not the biggest idea you can have.
Yeah. So. Especially if he's.
But isn't it coming to the Magic Keyboard? That's what we're hearing.
My ThinkPad's looking better and better.
The, improving the Magic Keyboard. Yeah. I want an OLED screen on it. I don't want working keys.
No keys. Who needs keys? So one of the touches, and this might confirm your point, Andy, or it might not. The undo touch, according to the leak, is that you tap with three fingers on the keyboard area, and then you slide left to undo, slide right to redo. Does that seem natural and usable? No.
It's also not not in the least discoverable, and if you have to now go to the app store to the Apple store and get a 2-hour training just to get started using your device, that's not. I mean they should realize that that's not
command Z was discoverable either, but.
Well, you had a menu that says undo, and then there's the command C right next to it, so it's easy to discover because just
that's right. You've got a reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the problems with multitasking on iPad in general is that the features are not that discoverable. So the things that you can do with it, the split screen and the pop-up side app thing. People like you and me, we use our iPads a lot and we kind of dig into those features, but the average person, someone like my mom, doesn't even know that you can do split screen. So I think the discoverability is exactly what you're saying, is that it's not intuitive to find those things and to use them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge iPad user, and anytime I need to move like several things from like mail into a folder, or I'm doing a presentation, I need to move several things into a slide, I know that there's a special gesture that will let me do discontinuous selection, and I can just sort of toss things into a pile that's being held by my index finger. But the amount of time it would take me to Google for information on how to do that, learn how to do that, then do that, is always much, much less time than it would take me to simply move 18 things individually one at a time. It's just, I've just never had. Yeah, I've none of these shortcuts ever stick for me. I can do a split window very, very easily, but none of these other deep sort of how many fingers do I have to have on the screen, where do they have to go, and what do I have to do with them, they just never stick in my mind. So I'm glad they're there for people who want to use them. The great thing about these features is that if you don't know about them, they're not going to confuse you and they're not going to add any layers of complexity. But the fact that they're there and so few people actually use them might indicate that they should be rethought, or even their placement should be reconsidered.
So, apps will be able to will have multiple windows, each window. Again, this is Guillaume Rambeau from 9to5 Mac with the help of Stephen Troughton Smith, who is, I think we have to call him the source code whisperer. Each window will be able to contain sheets that are initially attached to a portion of the screen but can be detached with a drag gesture, becoming a card that can be moved around freely. Apparently there's an open source project called Panel Kit that does this. The cards can also be stacked on top of one another and will use a depth effect to indicate which cards are on top and which are on the bottom. Cards can be flung away to dismiss them. It sounds like really they're reinventing the computer interface. That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. Also, I think one other issue is probably that most iOS apps are not don't offer the same kind of functionality than their desktop, Mac equivalents. And I think that's because the economics of the App Store are something that don't work in favor of the of the developers, and so I think that's another issue. Is like, why should I go and implement all this stuff if then the application doesn't make money for, you know?
It really makes me wonder how Pixelmator can charge $5 for Pixelmator.
Well, they are. I mean, they are front and center being promoted by Apple. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, but still...
it's millions of copies.
Millions.
It's worth way more than $5, yeah.
It's, yeah, I mean, it really is close to Lightroom.
Yeah.
And they're charging $5 for it. Well, I mean, that's great for us as users. I'm thrilled, but
yeah,
you do have to wonder about the economics of that. Yeah, Apple promotes them like crazy.
I just wish that in 2019 Apple would put half as much effort into productivity features for the Macintosh as they seem to be doing for the iPad.
How about like Split View, where they announced it once, never touched it again, and it's, you know, I love it, but I still can't use it because you have to literally destroy it and go reclaim a window that goes full screen just to start another Split View up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's so true. The Split View on Mac is like the bane of my existence. I want to use it. I love it for about 5 seconds when I'm using it, but any little thing like a notification in Slack and suddenly, oh, guess I have to exit out of Split View entirely just so that I can see what this notification is.
Yeah. And it's so simple. Which what you do is you either buy yourself a copy of Windows 7, not even Windows 10, copy that, and say that you fixed it, and that's how you did it. Or you find you go to the App Store, spend all of maybe $25 on the 2 or 3 really, really good Split View menu managers that are out there. Write somebody an awfully big check that makes them and their family very, very happy to own it, and then you're done. It seemed like such a weird – it's the thing that gets me really frustrated about Apple most regularly, that you could – their first thought about – if their thought was it'd be really handy to finally have window management that automates split views on the desktop – They're not taking their inspiration from all of the desktop operating systems that do it so well. Their idea is let's copy and paste it from our mobile operating system. Let's do it from iOS because, of course, when you think about lack of limitations and the ability to work with huge monitors and multiple apps and tasks at once, you think about the 9.7-inch iPad, don't you?
You're joking, it's but I would take the iPad version in a hot second. This is so much worse than anything anyone's ever done on any platform. You can't even change the app that's in the... I would just let me pull something from the dock and drop it in the split view to change it. Anything at this point.
Yeah. Again, I say... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
More iOS 3. I'll just quickly run through some additional features just for complete...
Just to torture us, Leo.
Just to torture you. Safari will automatically ask for a desktop version of websites when necessary. Because otherwise you often get the iPhone version on the iPad.
And like Reddit and like YouTube will load up the iPhone version on the iPad as if they could care less about
it. Yeah, yeah. So you don't have to press that request desktop site button. There will actually be an ability to add fonts.
That's called the Adobe Photoshop
for iOS. Everything.
No, that's called the Adobe Photoshop for iOS feature because previously you were going to have to download the Creative Cloud.
Oh, yeah. The new standard font picker component will be available. Mail app is getting smarter. It can organize messages into categories, searchable categories. Users can add messages to a read later queue.
I'm looking forward to this. I think the Mail app has been a little bit frustrating for its whole existence. And every time Apple adds some new feature to the Mail app, I'm always very excited. I purposefully use the Mail app, the built-in Mail app on one of my iPads, but only one of my iPads, because I'm trying to maintain, you know, remembering what it's like instead of using a third-party app that I think works a lot better.
What do you use instead?
You know, this is contentious. I don't like to talk about it a whole lot because everybody has very strong opinions on Mail apps.
At least we have choices.
Don't worry. This is a safe zone.
You're in a place of safety and love.
I use Outlook on my iPhone.
What?
On my other iPad.
Me too.
Outlook's very good. But isn't it really just a Compli? They bought a Compli.
Yes.
Which was great. And
Sunrise, right? They combined.
And Sunrise, the calendar.
Sunrise,
app.
Yeah. In fact, the reason that I switched over to
Wunderlist
Outlook was because of. Yeah. In fact, yes, it was Sunrise that made me look into Outlook in the first place. So that's why I switched to it. And I've used a number of different ones. And there's lots of great ones out there. But that's the one I settled on that I kind of found fits my methods the best. And on my Mac, I actually have currently gone back. I was using Newton and loved it. Absolutely loved it. I went when they folded and before they came back in under a different company. I switched back to the built-in Mac app on Mac because again, I'm trying to experience Apple's version of it.
Live with the people.
I want to experience it. I want to figure out the things I do like about it versus the things I don't like about it. There's one thing that I love about the Mac Mail app that I have not yet seen working in another third-party app, which, by the way, you can at me at Twitter if you have a suggestion for me, which is that I can actually drag conversations or emails from one account into a different folder. So if I get something from my work email, I can actually drag it into a folder that's from my personal email account. I love being able to do that because I might have a folder that's something along the lines of, PR. So any kind of PR information I get, I can drag it all into one folder. I don't have to have separate folders for my personal versus my work. I can drag them all into the same place. And I haven't seen any other third-party app that allows for that. So
there you go.
That's actually a nice feature. My point being, when it comes to Apple's Mail app, which is somewhat frustrating that it really does need a lot of work to be better. That's one thing that it does that I've never seen a third-party app do.
You know, now that most developers are using Slack to communicate with their teams instead of email, I wonder if that's not partially responsible for the lack of really great innovation in email. Because a developer who hates the app that they're using right now is so well motivated to do something to replace it. And
well, they all got bought, right? Like Sparrow emails. Got bought, and Spark is great, true. But a lot of them just get bought out by big companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the good ones keep getting bought.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I use the Outlook mobile apps, but on the desktop, I use the Outlook webmail app. Because I like the features of Outlook, but mostly there's server side features, and I've yet to find a desktop app that does anything better than that. And that's not really a praise necessarily for Outlook's web app. It's really talking about how someone stuck a pin in desktop mail apps about 6 or 7 years ago or 10 years ago, and it just hasn't moved much forward since, it seems.
Well, yeah, Andy, you're right there. I can remember 5 years ago getting emails all the time from these app developers that were saying, check out my new mail organizing app. And it was just the app store was just so full of them that it got to the point where I didn't even want to try them out anymore because there were just too many. And most of them were doing the same thing. And now we're kind of pulled away from that. And I think some of us are sort of desperate for that to come back to remind us, of some great organizing features that we can use. There was this huge inbox zero was such a big thing, and it wasn't even that long ago, like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, inbox zero was such a big thing. And now nobody's even really caring about it anymore. There's a handful of iOS apps and Mac apps for mail that have kind of carried over and that have stood the test of time, if you will, not necessarily because they're great, just because they lasted and everybody else just stopped trying.
Well, that is one good news point about the Qualcomm Apple settlement. I believe Qualcomm gave Apple the rights to Eudora. So, no, that's a joke. I don't think.
Excuse me, but Pine is still a very, very good male.
I'm a mutter. I use mutt. I like mutt. All right. Let's see. A couple more stories here. Apple has hired A&E's Molly Thompson as Apple's head of documentaries.
That's a great idea. One of the easiest ways you can differentiate yourself, your service from other people, is acquisition of documentaries. They're simple, single unit. They can get so much attention. And I think that pound for pound, dollar for dollar, minute for minute, the best quality content that's on streaming are documentaries. So whether she's going to be developing documentaries in-house, buying documentaries from festivals, or a combination of both, that's a really good sign about Apple Plus, I think.
I agree with you. I love documentaries. I mean, I don't know if documentaries are a big selling point, but I love them. And I'm glad to see Apple putting some energy into it. Whether, as you said, whether it's creating original ones, funding existing documentarians, or buying.
Look, I think there's no special effects and there's no stars. So that you're taking away two of the biggest expenses you've got. And they're evergreens. I saw the number of times where I've been on Hulu or Netflix or even just YouTube and found a documentary that's 11 years old that still feels as fresh as today, and I wind up having to buy the DVD because I love it so much. I want it as part of my permanent library. Yes, I'm a mutant, but I think there are enough mutants out there to make it worthwhile.
I agree. I am also a mutant. Let's take a break, and then if you will, prepare your picks of the week. That's coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. Actually, our show today, to be honest, brought to you by our IT department. More and more IT teams are the center of any enterprise. As the world becomes more cloud-based, IT teams have to plan, have to execute faster than ever. They're the most important people in the company, the people who keep everything flowing. And because applications are more complex than ever, incidents often require open, agile, and smart cooperation between operations and software development teams and all the stakeholders. IT is at the center of it, and at the center of IT, of course, Atlassian, the collaboration software company that empowers IT teams around the world. You know Jira. Everybody knows Jira, the greatest development tool ever for agile development. Actually, it's not just for development. We use Jira to keep track of other projects, so we always know who's responsible, who's working on it, what state the project's in, how close to completion, and when it's been completed. Jira, of course, is just the beginning. Atlassian has a whole suite of tools to help every part of your team, no matter what size, no matter what project, from DevOps to Agile to IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. Confluence, got to be in there. We use Confluence after a job is done to document what we did so that people who come after us will be able to use it and understand what happened. Communication is really important between members of the IT team, but also between the IT team and other stakeholders, customers, colleagues, the people who use the tools. Atlassian provides the technology backbone to help modern IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that propels the business. Jira and Confluence are just the beginning. There's Bitbucket if you've got a code database, Ops Genie, Status Page to help teams better detect incidents and coordinate response efforts. And as always, keep everybody up to date and communication flowing. Your team can go to Atlassian.com/IT and choose the tool that's right for you and your current framework, but trust that as you grow, those tools will grow with you, and it all integrates seamlessly with Jira and Confluence, so you don't have to, you know, step out of one thing to bounce to another platform to document it or to keep track of it. It's all in one tool set. I love it. Like all of Atlassian's products, the tool for your IT teams are easy and free to try. Just head to Atlassian.com/IT to find out which Atlassian offering is right for your team. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be. Atlassian, A-T-L-A-S-S-I-A-N. Atlassian.com/IT. We thank them so much, not only for their support of Mac Break Weekly, but for helping us get our job done each and every day. Our guest today from Boinks Software, and you live in Salzburg, Austria now. I know because you brought me some Mozart chocolates. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes.
I'll share them with you if I could just pass them across the... Get them over to you.
We have to do like virtual ones then.
But Boinks is still in Munich?
Boinks is still based in Munich, yes.
Salzburg's beautiful. Is
Salzburg
that why you're
is
there?
A very, very nice little town. Yeah. Very picturesque, as they say.
So I will leave. First of all, I should ask you how NAB was and if you saw anything there that we should all be thinking about and paying attention to.
Well, NAB was interesting, and especially like the VizRT NewTek merger.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, VizRT bought NewTek. And,
what?
Yes.
We're a big NewTek house, as you know.
Yes.
What's VizRT? I don't know.
VizRT. It's a Norwegian company well known for their broadcast graphics. So they do all the...
Did you know that, Alex? Oh, everybody knew about it, apparently. Yeah. I'm the last to... Okay. that's good. So they are now, according to the press release, a global powerhouse in advanced video systems.
Yeah, and also the for us the interesting thing was, of course, the announcements of NDI version 4.
We use SDI, which is the serial, what is it, digital interface, right?
Yep.
NDI is over Ethernet. It's network. Yep.
Exactly. It replaces the SDI and HDMI cables that you know.
And NewTek's been really promoting that, but is that starting to take
NewTek
off?
NewTek invented it. So, yeah. So, yeah, it's it's now in more and more camera vendors.
That would be really good news for us.
Mostly the PTC cameras from Sony and
so
Panasonic.
So you can control them with an Ethernet cable, but also send and receive.
So it's great because you only have one cable. Cable with power, video signal, audio signal, control.
There were competing technologies, as I remember. Is NDI going to win on this?
What's the other one?
I don't know. I was told by our team.
Yeah, there's a SMTE, standard, but the difference
is... But it interoperates with that, right?
The difference is that the SMTE standard is like a peer-to-peer cable, so they only use the cables, but you have to have special equipment on the other ends, and NDI works just over your regular network IP-based switches.
That's exciting.
And it's very exciting because we make the live video switching app MimoLive, and one of the big issues with the Mac, of course, is that it doesn't have any slots where you can plug in a SDI card.
We can get
around that with external PCIe extender boxes, but just having to have a network connection is a big benefit.
How many cameras could you support on a single network connection?
There's a limit.
Not
for
just control,
the,
but data as well, right?
It's a bandwidth limit, right? So NDI HX, which is compressed H.264 compressed standard, I think takes like 10 megabits per camera. So if you have a gigabit network, you can do 20, 30 cameras, and that's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your pick for us this week?
Pick for this week, I just went to Monterey. I was just in Monterey yesterday meeting with the California State Parks people, and they were showing me their really cool open ROV underwater drone. And I think that's my pick.
The Trident Open ROV.
Yes.
Drone.
Yeah, click that.
All right. Yeah. Wow. I want one of these.
Yes.
This is one drone that I can't destroy by dunking in the Caribbean. Like I did my last drone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't made for underwater. This one is. Well, that's really cool.
Of course, it's impossible to transmit RF signals underwater.
So you have to.
So it has
wire.
To be.
Yeah.
It has to be tethered. But it's a great device.
Actually, that's, I often wish that I had tethered my Mavic Pro because I would still have it.
Yes.
So I don't mind the tether. This is actually $1,699 is very cheap.
Is that,
I'm stunned. Maybe I will get myself an underwater drone.
Wow.
Wow.
To a 100 meter tether. Wow.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
I was expecting to see like, okay, you can go to the bottom of your pool, but to actually be able to like drop it off a boat or a dock and explore.
That's what they do at the state park. Yeah.
Wow.
They use it to explore the kelp forest outside of Point Lobos. And they go deep down to the bottom of this thing. So
you want to see some underwater video? Diving,
yes.
Diving with sharks. All right, let's go.
Definitely.
Let's go. Here we go.
I hope it's sending this video signal back because if the shark grabs it and runs off with it and destroys it, I would at least want to have video of that.
Yeah, you can actually stream live to the internet from the thing. So,
oh wow,
I want this too.
This looks cool, doesn't it?
You know, yes. I'm willing to chip in $500 for a 25% share of this.
I'm thinking if I bought this, I could take it back to the Caribbean and find my Mavic Pro.
Yes.
Robert Ballard.
We see the Mavic Pro sitting on the sea floor.
Surprisingly enough, the Mavic Pro supports a wide biodiversity of life, even at these 60 feet depths.
It's now a crab.
It has created
home.
Its own ecosystem.
Yeah. Lori Gill, pick of the week.
Well, my pick of the week comes from Logitech.
You have it?
Finally,
I am so far behind
you.
I just got the HyperDrive connector that you talked about.
Oh, you finally got it.
Yeah, and I'm waiting. They say they're making my keyboard now. I'll get it at the end of the month or something.
Yeah,
so tell us about it. How do you like it?
Well, okay, so a lot of people are going to question this, and you need to know, yes, it's heavy. It's called slim. It's not slim. It's heavy. It's big and it's heavy. But, see, that's like double the
thickness.
Oh, it
looks like a laptop.
Double the weight. There's some little things that I love about it. So anybody who's already used Logitech keyboards, you kind of have an idea of what their standard is. And I think that they've grown this time. One of them is in the material that's used on the back of the case, which I think is much better. It's a silicon style case, like Apple's Smart Case, instead of the fabric that they use, which I think looks better, but doesn't clean as well. What they use for the Apple Pencil, I think, is pretty brilliant. Oh, it's nice. A flap. This is actually the closure to keep your iPad closed.
With the flap, it does not charge
while it's in the flap, but unfortunately.
On the upside, you can drive your car.
And you can drive your car. And here's kind of my favorite thing about this flap. When it's open, it just sits back there out of the way. So when you're typing, your Apple Pencil is there, but it's kind of hidden in the background. If you don't need it, you don't even have to look at it. So it's nice. The keyboard itself is very Logitech. It has the nice springy scissor mechanism keyboard, real clicky clacky, has a good reaction. So if you like the Logitech keyboards, this is the same style of keyboard. One more thing that I think is an improvement on the way Logitech is making their cases now. I haven't had a new Logitech keyboard since the third generation iPad Pro 12.9 inch iPad Pro. So they may have already been doing this with like the new iPad keyboard slim case that they have for the standard iPad. But they use a soft silicon corner now instead of the hard plastic corners, which anybody who has owned a Logitech keyboard in the past knows those corners always break when you're pulling your keyboard out. You always end up breaking one of the corners. Well, it's now made out of a soft, pliable material, so you're not going to have that breaking problem anymore. Good. So that's my quick, short thing about the Logitech Slim Folio Pro that is now available finally for the 11-inch iPad and the third generation 12.9-inch iPad. That's my pick this week.
Actually, I was confusing that with the Bridge keyboard, which is coming. At the end,
which I also have. That'll be my pick next week. Sorry.
But I finally got this. Thank you.
Yes.
I do like this.
Have
HyperDrive.
You been using it?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. I like it that it has a headphone really jack. Nice. Mm-hmm. So I can finally use my headphones.
And it's so seamlessly iPad. Just clicks into the back of your iPad. That's really what nice I love about design. It. It's not a dongle. It just kind of fits in there real nice and tight.
Well, I buy everything Laurie recommends, so I guess I'll get this Logitech too now. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So I was skiing over the weekend, and I've used a variety of skiing apps, including Slope. There's a bunch of really good ones. And this time, because I had some people with me who were using Snow as well, I tried it out. It's Snowww, and it's created by this really excited British guy who just wanted to ski and wanted an excuse to ski, and so made an app as basically a way for him to get more skiing in, which I think is delightful. And it does all the sort of ski tracking that the Apple Watch API allows you to have. It'll work with the Apple, with the iPhone too, but if you drop your iPhone off a ski lift, it's not as much fun. So it's better just to go with your Apple Watch when you're skiing. It'll do everything, you know, but the photos. So it'll track how fast you're going, where you're going. It even has this amazing AR mode. So if you get to a rest point and you can't find your friends, you hold up your phone and it'll show you elevation and direction for where your friends are. So you know, I just got to ski down there, or I just got to jump on the chairlift there, and I'll get back with my group. And it has leaderboards. It's a nice social aspect. You can follow people and be followed by them. When I was skiing, there was a festival going on, and they had quite a few people from the Canadian Olympic team there. And it was just amazing to see them turn down the mountain straight and fire off like fastballs from like 100 mile an hour zoom straight down the mountain, not a care in the world, while I was terrified of every kind of sharpish turn. So, you could see at the end of the day, because there were a bunch of people at the festival just sharing their speeds, a real difference between someone skiing for fun and someone who's like Olympic level and not actually training at the time, but just sort of having their day off, and they're still like 800 times better than you can imagine being. But it made it into a real fun experience because they had the leaderboards up at the different chalets and you could look at it and see just how you were doing, how everyone was doing. If you wanted to include photos, they had a bunch of the photos up. And it's, you know, it was just having a group of people on a mountain. It made for an incredibly enjoyable experience.
This is free.
Yeah.
Are there in-app purchases?
There might be. I just installed it.
That's amazing. They're a serious.
Yeah, again, it might be an excuse for his hobby.
Serious skiers. Yeah, exactly. Now I can write off all my ski and my lift tickets.
Yeah.
I like the iMessage interface. That's awesome. You got stickers.
Yeah, the whole thing is really
sweet. It's really nicely done. Look at that watch interface.
And you can use Siri shortcuts so that if you don't even want to, I just have my watch on and I could reach it between my glove and my jacket. But if you don't even want to do that, you can create Siri shortcuts so you can just say, "Yo, Jimbo, you know, what was my last beat or start?" You know, all those sorts of things.
Nice.
Hey, Shlomo, I'm at the bottom of a ravine with two broken legs. Perchance you need some help.
Well, Apple Watch will catch that automatically.
Yeah, because there were part. I'm used to having fences at the edge of anything even remotely steep, and there were none there. So I was just like, turn, turn, turn.
Andy and Akko, pick of the week.
My pick is a new app called OneSwitch that does one simple thing, but it's such a handy thing. Like, there are times where I'm doing a screencast and I don't want people to see all the messy icons on my desktop. So I got to hide all my desktop icons. Or, I'm on radio and I'm using my laptop for notes. I just want to make sure the system doesn't go to sleep, while I'm speaking. And instead of having to go into settings and do multiple steps for this, OneSwitch puts all those functions into literally one switch. So I can just click one button, one switch that says keep awake, and suddenly whatever needs to happen in order to make sure that my MacBook will not go to sleep, it will not go to sleep. And if I want to switch to dark mode, I can switch to dark mode. If I want to hide my desktop icons, I will hide the desktop icons. It's $5, but it's such a – it's like why did I have to like go into system preferences to do a lot of this stuff for the past 10 years when I could have just – done it from like a menu bar app. It's very, very nice and $5. It's brand new. I think it just came out about a month ago. It's because of what it does. It will not be sold in the App Store because it violates sandboxing rules. Obviously, not that it's dangerous. It's just that it's the kind of app that is just impossible to sell through the App Store. But it's a 7-day free trial. They've got a roadmap. So that says all other features that they intend to keep adding to it as they keep going. But yeah, I downloaded it just 4 days ago, and I have not paid for it yet because I'm a slug. But I will almost certainly pay as soon as it tells me that I can't do that anymore because it's a free trial. I will definitely be paying for it.
Actually, you remind me, and I meant to talk about it today. I don't know if you guys talked about it last week, but the announcement that Apple made, and I was unclear about this, that they were in the next version of Mojave going to require notarization of apps. Did you talk about that last week? Or?
We did not.
Okay.
Nope. But I think they announced that a while ago.
Did they? Well, they did, and they said it's going to be a default in the next version of Mojave.
Yeah.
Which I think was the new announcement. I was just wondering what that means for developers. My concern is I want to understand what Apple means by default. Does that mean as a user I could still right-click and say open? Or does it mean that we're going to have everything be signed?
You can still right-click and say open. I think it's just a tighter requirement for apps that are signed.
Do you have any insight on that? Had you heard about that, Oliver?
Of course I've heard about it.
You got to do it. But you're already an Apple developer, so it's an easy thing for you.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. I think it's kind of a change in the way they do app signing that allows them more control over, you know, how they are able to disable malicious stuff on the computer. So
that's a good thing for
users.
Yeah,
it's for the users a good thing. I'm not sure about the developers. Potentially they can use that to strong arm you into doing things you don't want to do, or prevent you from.
Could they deny you notarization if they don't like what you're up to?
Yeah, sure.
So that was, I guess, my concern, and it was this particular sentence in the documentation. And it isn't the next version. Actually, the next version, all new or updated kernel extensions and all software from developers new to distributing with developer ID must be notarized. In a future version of macOS, at some point, notarization will be required by default for all software. That's what worried me a little bit.
Is that different than them just denying you a cert, though? Like, if they wanted to previously, they could have denied you certification.
Right. I don't know. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I was hoping that somebody here would say... Oh yeah, that's just another way of saying that.
I think the certification was being abused. Like
those phony Turkish. Actually, they were real certificates from a Turkish developer that were used in malware.
I think that's what this is.
So it's replacing
certificates
with notarization.
I don't know about replacing. I think it's just a second level of. You know, we could sign our stuff ourselves, and there was like you had to trust that we were the company really doing the signing. So if we lost our keys or whatever, and the notarization is just adding this step where Apple verifies that it's really us signing the application with our certificate.
See, that concerns me because if I can't run applications that have not been submitted to Apple for notarization,
you don't have to submit the app. It's just
well, it's a switch in Xcode. I understand.
Yeah, it's a.
But this is the headline: Give users even more confidence in your software by submitting it to Apple for notarization. It's been checked by Apple for malicious components, and it's going to be a requirement in future versions. Or, see, this is my question. What does default mean? Default for all software. Renee, I'm going to assign you. Look into this, will you, so we could talk about it next week. Because I'm just...
Absolutely.
That would concern me if every... It's what happens on iOS. You can't distribute iOS software without Apple approval. They say this is not an app store, but it sounds like it's a step toward that.
Yeah.
And that's my concern. So I don't want to see the iOSification
of macOS. I vaguely remember that this just replaces the old certification, but the old not certified doesn't change.
Okay.
If you choose to opt out of all of this, it doesn't change by a little double check.
Required by default for all software does not mean you have to do it.
Well, to be part of that certificate, if you're going to be in the store or you're going to be a registered, I forget what they're called, certified, the thing that lets you do that little trust...
Says must be notarized in order to run.
If you use the developer ID thing, so I think that's the key. If you don't do developer ID signing, then
Because you'd have to. I have to be able to write scripts on my own darn machine that I can run without a developer ID. I would think.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you would think.
That's my concern. You understand my point. All right.
I think Rich Siegel from Bare Bones is coming on next week.
Is he? Well,
I
good.
Think so.
Great.
But
he will. He will.
BBEdit is in the App Store. I'm sure he has some stories to tell.
Yeah, I'm very curious. So it is in the App Store now.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Phil Schiller actually tweeted out, "Hey, congratulations to Bare Bones."
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
I think they got paid to do it.
Well, yeah, they announced it. Remember, they announced it a year ago that this is, and everybody, think, and we asked Rich, "What's the deal?" Yeah, yeah.
We'll have the person who can actually tell.
Rich will answer. As we continue talking to developers. My pick of the week, very quickly, Princeton University has a project. They're looking at smart devices and what information they're collecting. And they are offering Mac only at the moment, although they're working on a Windows version and an Android version. Or I'm sorry, a Linux version. The Princeton IoT Inspector, which is a tool for macOS that you install, and I'm actually running it at home, that will tell you not only all the devices, the IoT devices on your network, but what data they're exfiltrating, how much data they're exfiltrating, what exactly is going on. And this is really geeky and nerdy. In fact, it looks like it's an Apple script, as you can see. And it does require a modification of the kernel. You have to give it permissions. But I think this is very interesting. And if you've been curious what your IoT devices are doing, as I was, and I have many, this is a very interesting new project. It is a research project. You'll be giving information to this team at Princeton. But I trust Princeton. iot-inspector.princeton.edu if you'd like to play with this. And I will be talking more about what I learned. It's been running the last few days on my system at home. But it'll also tell you... if your devices have been hacked. Who do they talk to? What information is gathered? It tells you what security protocols they use, whether it's using broken encryption, which a number of my devices are.
Leo, are you one of the favorite channels in Latveria?
Yeah,
Dr. Doom spent his weekends just watching your cameras?
Yeah, exactly. It's so much fun. Mr. Oliver Breidenbach, it's great to have you. Thank you for coming out all this way.
Thanks.
BOINX.com if you want to take a look at all of their amazing products. And you guys keep coming up with more all the time. How long have you been macOS developers? Long time.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Like the 90s. Somewhere.
Yeah. So along with Rich Siegel, one of the originals.
Yes.
We make cool photo and video software for Mac, iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. BOINX.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Mr. Andy Iannocco, Boston Public Radio's Andy Iannocco. When will you be next on WGBH?
Thursday at 1, and you can either tune in live at WGBH or 89, or you can stream it at WGBHnews.org. They also, after about a day, it'll probably be available for on demand wherever you are.
Awesome. Great to have you, Andy. Rene Ritchie, he runs iMore.com, and of course, that Vector podcast, always great stuff at iMore.com/Vector. Anything coming up you want to mention?
Well, I just put my Apple Watch 6 months later review up today. So if you're curious how it's holding out and want to see me try to ski and do yoga and all sorts of things, not too successfully.
Have you set off the fall sensor for real yet? I know in your initial review you fell on purpose.
I've done that a couple times. I've even done it when flopping on the sofa, but very, very rarely. But you know, like, as we talked about last week, Georgia actually fell down the stairs and needed it. So
it has
done some good.
I didn't hear that. Is she okay?
Yeah, she was home and she was going down the basement. She was wearing socks and the basement steps were slippery and she fell down and she hurt herself pretty badly.
Yikes.
And it came up. And luckily her brother was visiting, who's not there very often, and he heard and came running. But her husband wasn't home, so she was happy that went off and she had the option of canceling it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just lying there waiting for someone to come home.
Cool. iMore.com/Vector. And, of course, Lori Gill, managing editor at iMore. Anything you'd like to mention upcoming in your life?
Yeah, you know, actually, I've been lucky enough to interview women in tech, founders of companies, entrepreneurs, developers. So if you search for me on iMore, if you search for my articles on iMore, you'll see two so far that have come up that are interviews with different women. And I have a few more in the future, and hopefully this will just continue. I'm really enjoying this, talking to women who've just done a lot of amazing things that there's Sue Kim right there.
Brilliant. Love Brilliant. Brilliant's awesome.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And these women have just done a bunch of great things. And I think for me, from my perspective, is that I'm trying to normalize women in tech, because it is amazing and important and special, but I also want the future to know that women have been doing things too all along. Instead of them sort of accidentally getting written out of history, I'd like them to be kind of just sort of incorporated into all of our history in the future. So I've been really happy to be able to talk to these women and get some amazing insight into how they got into what they were doing. So
that's a great series. And it's easy to find Lori's work if you just Google Lori Gill and iMore. G-I-L and iMore, you will find her page with all of these articles. And an interesting haircut. I've never seen your hair that short.
I've had so many different haircuts. If you go to I've changed it. My bio page used to have me with rainbow hair color.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I've done a lot of different things. I'm actually, the next time you see me, or sometime within the next 2 weeks, I'm actually considering going like some kind of lavender or lilac with my hair. So be prepared.
Oh, boy. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you, Andy. Thanks to all of you. It's spring break week at Mac Break Weekly. We had a Mac World size audience here. So thanks to Robert and Jenny from Fort Collins, to Sal and is it Hanin? Did I get that right? Yeah. Hi, Hanin from New Jersey, to Rick and Jennifer from Toronto, for Michael, who's here from Cal State Teach up in Sacramento, and Rick and Jeannie from New Jersey also. Thank you all for being here. We appreciate it. If you want to be in studio, we'd love to have you. You see, each of you get your own individual chair. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv, and we'll find more. We'd love to have you. You can also watch live on the stream. You don't need a chair for that. You can recline. You can do anything you want. If you go to twit.tv/live, watch it in bed. It's fine with me. If you're
I'm actually sitting in a pool right now.
There you go. You see? You see? All you have to do is go to irc.twit.tv and you'll be hanging with all the other people watching live. If you want an on-demand version, we've got that too at twit.tv/MBW for Mac, Break Weekly, or of course you can subscribe and get every episode the minute it's available just in time for your Wednesday commute. Thanks for watching or listening. We'll see you next time. But now I'm sad to say it's time to go back to work because break time is over.